So my apologies for being a little tardy. We are here for the January 9th investigative committee for the Arizona State Board of Dental Examiners. And I was sort of keeping an eye on our committee members. But what do we need for a quorum?
We need six members for a quorum.
So we have a quorum. So let's go ahead and do roll call.
Caputo?
Here.
Harris? Asfari?
Here.
Berrigan?
Here.
Dodell? Bukami?
Here.
Imtiaz? Kalamji? Kappas? Martin? Motihari?
Yeah.
So, did you not get a response for Dodell or Kappas?
Yes, Kappas is here.
Okay. And David, are you out there? Okay, well, we'll just try to make a note when we hear from him of when he joined. Oh, he's got his hand up. Let's see. Are you having audio problems? Is that what the issue is? Oh, there you are. Okay. You can hear okay? Okay. All right. So can we acknowledge that Dr. Dodell is with us? He has audio. Apparently, he just has some. All right. I guess he has video. He doesn't have audio. Probably a better way to say that. Okay, and then can we get our decorum slide? Is that one available? So I see a number of folks with us today. I also saw some names of licensees whose cases are going to be discussed. This particular meeting of the investigative committee is a open meeting, which is obviously why you are all participating and present. We appreciate you being here. But with it being an open meeting, it's for your observation only, unless specifically called upon, and that would be agendized if that were to occur. And we do have such a situation today where we would allow a non-committee member or board staff to participate in the meeting. Otherwise, you are more than welcome to listen and hear the discussion and deliberations that take place today, but you will not be allowed to ask questions or otherwise participate during the meeting. Your opportunity, if so inclined, either by yourself or with your legal representation, would be able to do that at the actual board meeting itself. So disruptions are not permitted unless specifically directed, as mentioned. We do require a level of professional decorum, and any type of behavior that doesn't meet that level as identified in this slide here will result in you not being able to communicate further, as well as potentially impact your further involvement with future meetings. So we would respect everybody's understanding and appreciation of this request for decorum. We have a full meeting today. So outside of saying Happy New Year to everyone, I don't want to spend too much time with discussion, understanding that we have a lot going on. What I would like to do is get right into our agenda. And we can make, and I don't know that I did it specifically, but we can formally say we called to order at 101. And then at this point, I'd like to identify if there are any conflicts of interest by the committee members for any cases that are on the agenda for today. And David, do you have a conflict that you'd like to identify?
I do. Do you hear my audio now?
Oh, we hear you now. Great.
Okay, yeah. I have a conflict for 37, but I think I can judge it impartially.
Okay. Other conflicts? Seeing none. And David, I would like to welcome you. It's nice to have you back.
Appreciate
you being here with us today. With respect to your comment, I would like to ask our Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan for a really quick primer, if he wouldn't mind. And Seamus, this just relates to the identification of conflicts. I know last meeting you mentioned if the committee member has a conflict but feels as though they can be involved or participate with the case impartially or neutrally, they don't need to declare that conflict. I'm just wondering if you could give us a sense of how you would like us to handle identifications of conflict of interest for this particular committee.
Absolutely. This is AAG Monahan. Thank you very much, Dr. Caputo. Yeah, so again, if you believe – if there's a situation in which you know somebody and you don't believe that you have a conflict – then you would state, you know, if you feel that you need to, you can state on the record, I know this individual, I don't believe it's a conflict, I believe that I can adequately and impartially determine this case and my recommendation. If you believe that you cannot participate because of that relationship, that would be a conflict. So essentially, to take Dr. Dodell's example, it's not a conflict, but what it is him, he is just recognizing that he does know this individual, and that just goes to the appearance of impropriety. So it just kind of, you know, lays all the cards on the table and says, hey, this isn't a conflict, but I do, you know this individual, but I feel that I can be impartial.
Okay. So go ahead and identify that, and identify it accordingly is what I hear you saying.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then certainly if we have to recuse ourselves, we'll identify that. And generally, if that's the case, we do want to make sure that you've been in contact with either Yasmin or April so that we get the proper documentation completed as well. Thank you for that. So we have no identified conflicts in terms of participation. That brings us to The next item on the agenda, which is our review of our meeting minutes from December 5th, 2023. And my hope is that folks have already had a chance to review those minutes. And I would open the floor for either any corrections, edits, or other types of needed changes. And if there are none, I would accept a first and a second to approve the minutes from December 5th.
This is Kappas. I move to accept the minutes from December 5th.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Mata Hari, second.
So we have a first by Kappas, second by Mata Hari. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Farragut? Farragut?
Yes.
Dodell?
Abstain.
Fukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Mata Hari?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries. Minutes have been approved. We are now on agenda item four, items for review. discussion and possible action and board recommendations. Our first item to discuss today, and I will just get that form pulled up, is agenda item 4A1, case number 2023-00142. As a reminder for the committee, this was a case that was reviewed at our September 9th committee meeting, and during that discussion, it was determined to hold an investigative interview with the licensee. And so that's where we are at now. As a reminder to the committee, the discussion at the time that was raised was involved with Dr. Cynthia Fukami, who I directed to do the questioning, main questioning for the interview today, based on the discussion at that time. So once we get to that portion of this review, I will turn it over to Dr. Fukami for questioning. Once she has finished with the questions that she has for the licensee, there will be an opportunity for other committee members to ask questions as well. Once that has been completed, we will do any type of needed summary and then go into our deliberations regarding a recommendation to the full board. So with that, it is currently 1:12 p.m. on January 9th, 2024, and pursuant to ARS 32-1263-02-C, this is a voluntary investigative interview regarding case number 2023-00142. At this time, I would ask the licensee to please come forward and introduce yourself, as well as if you have any legal representation with you today. And I think I saw you out there, Dr. Tobias. Are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. And go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm Dr. Luz Tobias, and practicing dentist. I graduated in 1999 at NYU, have been practicing in the Valley since 2001.
Okay. And are you here alone today, or do you have an attorney or other legal representative with you?
No, sir. It's just myself.
Okay. Thank you for that. I would also just like to confirm with board staff, do we have a court reporter, or are we just recording this?
I'm not sure. If the court reporter is on the line, can you please identify yourself? Okay, so I don't think we have a court reporter present, but we can continue.
Sure. No, absolutely. So this proceeding is being recorded by a digital device. To make a clear record of the proceedings, everyone must speak loudly and clearly, and I request that only one person speak at a time. Please wait for any question to be fully asked before answering. And Dr. Tobias, can we get you on screen here?
Hold on. Let me just get this. Hold on. Hold on, okay, let me call my IT guy.
Dr. Caputo, this is AAG Monahan. Is this for the purposes of
swearing in? Are we good with just raising
If she's willing to just verbally indicate that she's assenting, I think that's appropriate.
Okay, so it's okay, Dr. Tobias. I'm just going to swear you in. Are you with me still?
Hold on, I'm not computer savvy, so I'm going to have...
No, you can hear me fine. Yes?
Okay. That's it. Good. Thank you.
Oh, here you are. Okay. Could you please raise your right hand? I'm going to place you under oath. Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you. Okay. My name is Dr. Anthony Caputo, and I am chair of the investigative committee. I am a dentist, and I specialize in anesthesia. I would now ask the other committee members to introduce themselves as indicate their area of practice.
We'll go ahead and do a roll call for that. So,
sure.
Is it me, April?
Yes.
Yes, please.
This is Dr. Mahshid Mia Asrari. I am a board-certified endodontist practicing in the state.
Thank you.
Berrigan?
My name is Karen Berrigan. I'm a board-certified orthodontist. I practiced in Arizona for the last 37 years.
Dodell?
My name is David Dodell. I'm a general dentist, and I've been practicing for over 40 years.
Fukami?
I'm Cynthia Fukami. I'm a board-certified dentist anesthesiologist. Been practicing for 23 years.
Kappas?
My name is Deborah Kappas. I am a registered dental hygienist licensed in the state. I have been licensed for over 50 years, if you can believe that.
Madhahari.
Mindy Madhahari, general dentist, been in Arizona for 20 years.
Thank you. Also present is the board's executive director, Ryan Edmondson, the board's attorney, Seamus Monahan, from the attorney general's office, as well as other board staff. Although this is not an evidentiary hearing, if you, Dr. Tobias, have any questions for the board or staff, please direct them through me. If you refer to patients, please do so by their initials only. The purpose of this voluntary investigative interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of the aforementioned case. This process will assist the committee in determining if there's reasonable cause to believe that the allegations made in the complaint are true, whether they constitute a deviation from the standard of care, and whether they are of sufficient seriousness to warrant action by the board. The committee will make an advisory recommendation to the board concerning the disposition of this case. We'll begin the interview by allowing you to make a brief opening statement if you choose. After your opening statement, you'll be asked to respond to questions proposed by the committee. At the end of questioning, you will have the opportunity to address the committee with any rebuttal or closing comments. Once the interview is completed, the committee will go into deliberations for the purposes of deciding an appropriate recommendation to the board. This will not be a time for you or you to offer any more testimony or comment. If you have any questions about this process, please ask them now.
No, I don't have any questions.
Thank you. So, Dr. Tobias, now is the opportunity for you to make an opening statement about the case.
Okay. So, on February 11, 2023, patient L.E. came to the office for a complete exam, examination, and we did a full mouth x-ray. And after that, we did not, you know, we just scheduled her on the 14th. So, she has a schedule for February 14th. For, the treatment, to start the treatment with a bridge. On that day, February 14th, she no-showed. She didn't show up, so we scheduled her for 2/17. We called and rescheduled her for 2/17. She showed up on 2/17, and we started treatment on her on the bridge, which was supposed to be done on the 14th. And, but then the 2/17 was scheduled already for the next stage of treatment, which was the crown and 28 and the scaling and root planing on the lower teeth. Yeah. And so when we did the, we gave her an appointment for that data to February 17th for 3 hours because it's a bridge. We, you know, I had to prep four teeth for, as abutment or a retainer. But then again, the problem was after the prep, everything was just fine. We had no problems with it. When my, assistant started doing the temporary bridge, that's when the problem occurred. She started getting upset and, the husband came in upset and I found out just listening to their conversation that they had a barber appointment. And so I'm thinking it was the conflict with another appointment that made her very upset. But the thing is, my assistant did her best to do the bridge, the temporary bridge. We had nothing to work with. So my assistant did the best she can, but I guess it was not good enough for her. And so she walked out of the office upset. And the following day, I called her to appease her and ask her what happened, and she said she's not coming back.
Dr. Tobias, were you present at the meeting of September 5th?
No, sir, because my mom passed away.
No, I understand, and I did see that, and I'm sorry for your loss. I just was wondering if you were present at that meeting.
No, sir.
Okay. So the issue that was raised through the consultant was really regarding your records, more so than it was your treatment of the patient.
Okay.
And I'm just going to briefly identify to you what those concerns were and see if you have any comments regarding what was identified by the consultant.
Uh-huh.
So according to the consultant that worked with you and reviewed this case and presented a report to the committee, they indicated that you submitted a new treatment plan and a periodontal chart to the dental board that has the high probability of a cut and paste with signature block of the patient on it. The cut and paste is one piece of document pasted onto another document to deceive the reader. When looking at the original document, you can see spacing before the last block on the bottom that is describing the treatment plan as an estimate. On the potentially altered document, the space before the block is gone and there is a line from the upper left of the block to the edge of the paper typical of a cut and paste. In addition, there are faint images showing through or bleeding through the document. So the concern is that the documentation that you presented to the board following your initial document presentation was altered. And that's the concern that was raised at that committee meeting. Do you have any comment on that? Are you aware of this at all?
I don't know. What paper is that? What document is that?
So, I'm going to go down and see if I have, let me just see if I have a page number referenced in my.
It's page 41 in the new document.
41? Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So, okay. Well, yeah, that's just the report. I'm actually looking in the records themselves. So let me just see. It starts with, and I would have the committee look at this. The original page, let's see here.
Page 90, Dr. Caputo.
Is 90 is the original?
Yeah, it has the signature block you're discussing.
Right, that's the one that looked like it was altered. The one that, and then 88 is the one that looked like, no, 88 looks like it was the one. 90 is the same. It's 92 that has the space. Is there any way for, this would have been, Dr. Tobias, the active treatment plan, for this patient. I am seeing if I have a date on there. And then subsequently, there is another active treatment plan that has a, let's see, that has a date of 2/11/23. This other one does not even have a date on it. But do you happen to have an active treatment plan that you presented to this patient dated 2/11/23?
Hold on. Let me just look for it.
There may be members of the public who are raising their hand right now. Currently, this is just a discussion between the committee members and the respondent. Thank you.
I can't see anything right now. You mean a treatment plan?
It's one of your office documents, and it says active treatment plan. The concern is that the document was altered. Are you aware of anybody, yourself or staff included, altering any documents that were sent to the board?
I have no clue. I have no idea, doctor.
Would you have sent documents in their original format without doing any type of alteration or changes?
Yes, sir. We submitted everything.
I know that you submitted documents, but there were documents that were submitted out of order, and one of the documents received out of order looked as though it was altered. And that's what we're just identifying with you, if you're aware of any alteration or changes of those documents.
I am not aware of anything, doctor.
Okay.
Dr. Caputo?
Yes.
This is AAG Monahan. I apologize for jumping in here.
No.
If I could maybe help direct the conversation.
Please.
And I won't ask these questions. You can ask these questions. But if Dr. Tobias could speak to her ability to make a treatment plan on February 11th, 2023, and the statement that she made to the investigator that she was unable with the software to create a treatment plan, then followed up by the treatment plan that was then provided, which the complainant has indicated is not her signature.
Okay. What happened was we had a change of software. We changed from Dentrix to Open Dental, and that was the time when we were still, getting our training. And so everything was done manually. I have all my, my records. I wrote it up. Everything was written on a, like the little blank paper that we have for periodontal scaling and root planing. And then, when the girls were finished with their training, they were able to, enter everything in the dental and the open dental. Yeah, we just purchased the open dental. That's why.
Right. And we're aware of that. Thank you. And I just didn't want to take too much away from where Dr. Fukami might want to ask questions. Well, I'm just, you're fine. But what I'm going to do, because I don't want to take away from questions that Dr. Fukami may have, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Dr. Fukami, who may get into some of that. But there is a question regarding the validity of those documents. I just wanted to make sure you had an understanding of that treatment plan, and as Assistant Attorney General Monahan identified, the issue with that process of writing versus using the software. So at this point, I'm just going to go ahead and let Dr. Fukami ask questions that she may have without trying to do any crossover on her part. So Dr. Fukami, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Cynthia Fukami. I'm a dentist anesthesiologist on the investigation committee, and I thank you for meeting with us today. So I think you've already gotten a bit of a preamble from Dr. Caputo's discussion there about what our concerns were about the case. We do have the investigator's report with the accompanying documentation, and there were some questions for which we are specifically seeking clarification. I was hoping to sort through those with you today. So in regards to this case, 20230042, my first question to you is, to ask if all of the patient records have been submitted to the board investigator. So meaning, have all the notes, charts, consents, treatment plans, billing, records, photos, x-rays, anything that's in the patient chart at your office, have those all been forwarded to the investigator?
Yes, yes, we have submitted everything.
Okay, and so you are aware of what you have submitted?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have a list of those. Okay, and then if you could explain for us, you know, how do you usually complete periodontal charting at the time of the initial examination?
Okay, so during the initial examination, we usually do the full mouth x-rays, exam, and periprobing.
Okay. So in this report, there are actually two periodontal probing charts.
Mm-hmm.
One chart was submitted as part of the initial subpoena, and it contains the probing depths for some missing teeth. And then another chart was submitted subsequently after your interview with the board investigator, and it does not include charting or probing depths for those missing teeth. And so there's a bit of a discrepancy.
Yeah.
Could you explain the discrepancy between those two charts?
Yeah, I explained it to the doctor that did the investigation. Yeah, because I have the original. When I did the SRP, my assistant, did the probing on the original, this paper right here. But then again, you know, when my assistant probably entered it in the computer, the Open Dental, she may have made some mistakes because she was still in training with Open Dental. So that's the only thing I could think of right now.
When was the SRP done?
The SRP was not done at all because there has been some problems with the software. It was something new, and so she was scheduled for the SRP on the 17th, but since she didn't show up on the 14th, we ended up doing the bridge first because that's her primary concern. We did the bridge, but we were supposed to do the SRP, everything at that day, because it's kind of hard for her to come in. So, but then again, since we had a problem with the temporary bridge, she walked out and we were not able to do the SRP.
So if the SRP wasn't done, then the probing would have been done at the initial examination. So this would still, so the two charts that we have would still reflect the probing that were done on that first day. Is that correct?
Uh-huh.
So this there would have been only one time of entry for that.
Right.
For that appointment.
This is my original. Everything that's handwritten is the original because that's what we did. We were not confident yet to enter everything in the computer because we were still training. And we didn't have the computer in the operatory yet. So everything was done manually. And then the girl in the front was supposed to transfer it to the computer after the training.
Okay. Thank you. My next question is, how do you usually obtain informed consent from a patient for treatment?
Well, on the first day, when we do our treatment planning, we enter the treatment plan in the computer, we print it out, and we have the patient sign it. Explain to them, the assistant would explain to them the treatment plan, the priority of treatment, and they sign it.
Okay. Did this patient sign a consent for treatment?
Yes, she did. Everything was explained to her.
Do you also have them, you said you haven't signed a treatment plan. Did they sign a treatment plan?
Yes, ma'am. She did.
Okay. So I'll just let you know, we don't have a signed consent in our records. What we do have, though, is two copies of a treatment plan that were submitted. One was submitted as, again, part of the initial subpoena and is unsigned. And a second and slightly different copy of a treatment plan was submitted later or subsequent to your interview with the board investigator, and that one contains a patient signature. So would that be the treatment plan that was signed by the patient?
Yes. Uh-huh. I don't see any of that.
Do you want to find that?
I can probably look it up in the computer.
Okay, I will. So again, I just to let you know, if the board does indeed have all copies of the items that are in the patient record, just to let you know again, we do not have a signed consent, and what we have are two treatment plans, of which there is a question. So as was brought up before, let me perhaps explain to you what our concern was about that. Mm-hmm. So again, during your interview with the board investigator, you mentioned at that time that you were unfamiliar with the new practice management software, and that's what you were just explaining. Mm-hmm. But at the time, you mentioned that you did not know how to have patients sign treatment plans and consents. The patient herself also denies signing a treatment plan or consent.
Yeah, but it's my assistant. It's the assistant that have it signed. It's the assistant's job to explain the treatment plan to the patient.
I understand. Okay. But at least we have these two, and the investigator and the committee have concerns that the patient signatures on the initial health history form that was completed by the patient and the signature that's on the subsequently submitted treatment plan look very similar. And so can you recall with us, if it wasn't done digitally, how this patient signed this second treatment plan?
I'm sorry, what is the question? Because we have the treatment plan signed. I've seen it. It's probably in our records right now. I'm just not computer savvy because my IT guy put everything in here, but then he left and I don't know how to open it up. And well, I can't find it here.
Do you know how does your patient normally sign treatment plans now?
Yeah, they just signed the presented treatment plan to them.
Okay.
The assistant would have to explain first. And then if they have any questions, the assistant will answer. And if the assistant cannot answer it fully, then the assistant would usually come call me so I can explain it further to the patient before the patient signs it.
I understand. I think that's all my questions so far. I appreciate your time.
I mean, we've been doing this. You know, I've had Dentrix for 20 years. And so we do this all the time. All the time. It's just that at that time we had that open dental thing. That's why we have all this, you know, little problems that happened.
Dr. Tobias, we understand the issue with new technology. Mm-hmm. What we're not understanding is why we don't have documents that you say are present. You say you have them, but yet they're not in our file. The technology doesn't matter. It's the existence of the document. So if you have the documents that Dr. Fukami identified and you indicated that you supplied everything to the board when requested, then we should have those documents, and we don't. That's the deficiency. This doesn't have anything to do with your new technology. So that's the discrepancy that we are not identifying here. The other thing I want to make sure I understand, if I heard you correctly, it is the responsibility of your assistants to have the patient sign treatment plans or consents. Is that what you said?
Well, yeah, after the patient has understood, you know, what the treatment plan is.
What I'm saying is, it's the assistant's responsibility to get that signature. Is that what you said?
Yes,
sir. This is not your responsibility. So if the assistant doesn't do it, then it's not your fault that wasn't done or your responsibility.
No, because we check. We make sure. It's already a protocol in the office.
No, I understand. I'm asking about the responsibility. It's the assistant's responsibility is what I hear you saying, not your mm-hmm. responsibility. Is that correct?
Well, to have them sign it, yeah.
Right. So if the assistant doesn't do it and it doesn't get done, that's not your responsibility.
Oh, no. That is still my responsibility. I want to make sure everything is done the way we do it for years. We've been doing it for years.
Okay. Are there other questions from any other committee members? Okay, seeing none. Now that we've completed all of our questions, do you have any additional remarks or a brief closing statement that you'd like to make, Dr. Tobias?
Not much, doctor.
Okay. I just want to make sure. We appreciate your involvement in this process. At this time, we are going to go into our own discussion and deliberation of this portion of the meeting. Okay?
Okay.
And so you can go ahead and put yourself on mute because we won't have you participate any further as your part is completed. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so to the committee, based on the discussion that we just had, as we would with any other case that we are deliberating, we are now into that portion of our discussions. So comments, considerations by the committee. Dr. Fukami.
Yes. So I think that presented us with some additional information, but perhaps the concerns that we raised at the initial meeting back in September are still present. I think if we were to look at the investigator's report, let me pull that up, on page...
And you're talking in the current packet?
Yes.
Okay.
If we were going to go to page 39.
Okay.
And going into page 40 and 41. So I think he outlined what the concerns were regarding each allegation, plus the additional ones with the subsequent submission of documents. The opinion of the committee was that of the five allegations that were presented, that most were found to be not substantiated, that there might have been a concern about either presenting with a non-disciplinary consent or a letter of concern for some of the treatment that was provided and or billing issues. But I think since the concern about the documentation was raised, I think that's really where the focus of today's discussion will probably rest upon.
Correct.
And so, you know, my concern again still is I haven't really heard anything to sort of remove the concerns that we had regarding alteration of records, that it appears that the two documents were submitted after the investigative review. So both the periodontal charting and the treatment plan don't look like, they look like they have been modified since, their original form when submitted with the initial subpoena. I think that's a valid concern. And, I think that's something that definitely needs to be raised and addressed.
I would agree with you, and I think what's clear is that the documents that we have are supposed to be complete, and they're not, and I didn't hear sufficient comments from the licensee regarding where those documents actually are. So I think you're correct. For the purposes of the discussion, I would propose the consideration of violation of 32.12.01.01, 12, 14, 15, and 24. And as a review of those areas of statute, 12 is knowingly making any false or fraudulent statement, written or oral, in connection with the practice of dentistry. 14 is committing any conduct or practice that constitutes a danger to the health, welfare, or safety of the patient or public. 15 is obtaining a fee by fraud or misrepresentation, or willfully or intentionally filing a fraudulent claim with a third party for services rendered or to be rendered to a patient. And then I think that was it, 12, 13, 14, 15. Based on that, yes, there's a comment.
And 24, I think you mentioned it.
Oh, 24, thank you, sorry. And 24 is failing or refusal to maintain adequate patient records. So, and just so we're all on the same page, there's ORs in a lot of those areas of statute, and so it doesn't have, the entire comment doesn't have to apply as a result. So understanding that and understanding what we've heard today, I would add to the original proposal. The original proposal was, well, first, let's just deal with this. So is there further comment on those identified violations? And if not, or I would accept a second to those violations.
Second.
Okay, so second Fukami. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Odell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Chappas?
Yes.
Zahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. So in consideration of recommendations, I had originally proposed non-disciplinary, or at least that was what was in my notes. I would consider, in light of our interview, to propose a disciplinary action that would include three units of ethics and three units of risk management. And I'd also like to include 6 months of chart auditing, specifically in areas where patient signatures are required, such as treatment plan, consents, and other aspects of approving care. And I'll open that up for discussion or a second or changes.
Odell is willing to second.
So we have a second. Is there other discussion? Cynthia.
I propose a reduction of the time from 6 months to 3 months, but in lieu of that would add 4 hours of record keeping for CE.
I think that's what I meant. Oh, you said instead of three. I think I said three. I think it's a standard thing. Cynthia is why I said that. But let me just make sure I had, I think I had oh, I said risk management. But I think if memory serves and someone can help me on this as well. But if I recall risk management, record keeping, there one involves the other.
Record keeping is included in risk management. However, I do believe they are offered in multiples of 2 hours rather than three. So
four.
Yeah, okay. So in general, four if we're going with Dr. Fukami's recommendation.
So it'd be 4 hours of risk management?
Correct, which would include record keeping.
Okay, and then the 3 hours of ethics. And then 3 months of chart auditing to include or to look at any and all documents requiring patient signature or treatment plan, consents, or approval for treatment. And does that sound good, April, as far as direction to the board?
Yes, we got that.
And David, are you okay with 6 to 3?
I'm good with the modification.
Okay. Any other comments? So we have a recommendation for disciplinary action to include 4 hours of risk management with record keeping and 3 hours of ethics and 3 months of chart auditing as discussed. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Dr. Bukami, thank you very much. I think you did a great job, and I appreciate your thoughtfulness as well as your previous discussion on this matter in September. As we move on with our agenda, Seamus, I would like a little input with you, if I might. As you may or may not know, 20 of the cases that we are considering today revolve around the same topic. I would like to address those in bulk, if I may. I'd like to look at one group as they pertain to the licensee and then one group as they pertain to the entities. And with your approval, that's how I'd like to at least move forward with those at this time.
I'll leave that up to you and the committee, Dr. Caputo. I would just ask that you clearly identify which case at which time that you're discussing.
Okay. So I know we usually do a different format, but in light of this particular agenda, I'd like to handle this grouping separately. So, and for the sake, unless otherwise requested, I'd like to just refer to the agenda item versus the case number, just to keep me from getting tongue-tied. So I am looking at agenda item, starting with agenda item 4C2 through agenda item 4C21. What I'd like to do is take agenda item 4C2 through 4C11 and deal with that as its own group, and then take agenda item 4C12 through 4C21 as its own group, but with one case modification, which I'll identify at that time. Are we okay with that, or would anybody like to do something different?
I'll second that.
Okay. And it's not a motion or anything, but I just wanted, if we're good with it, then this, okay, so here's what I'm proposing. So for purposes of the record, I will read off the case number. So for agenda item 4C2, case number 2023-00188, agenda item 4C3, case number 2023-00189, agenda item 4C4, case number 2023-00190. Agenda item 4C5, case number 2023-00191. Agenda item 4C6, case number 2023-00192. Agenda item 4C7, 2023-00193. Agenda item 4C8, case number 2023-00194. Agenda item 4C9, case number 2023-00195. Agenda item 4C10, case number 2023-00196. And agenda item 4C11, case number 2023-00197. I would like to make a recommendation of dismissal.
This is Karen Berrigan. I second that.
Okay. Is there any committee member that would like to discuss any of those cases further and remove them from the dismissal recommendation? Please identify now. Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, so for agenda item 4C12 through 4C21, I am going to make the same recommendation except for agenda item 4C14, 2023-00200. So I am specifically for the committee looking at ARS 32-1263-D7, which reads, Section D is for the purposes of this section, unethical conduct means the following acts occurring in this state or elsewhere regarding a business entity. And 7 is failing to notify the board of a change in officers and directors, change of address, a change in the dentist providing services, or a change in the custodian of records pursuant to 32-1213 subsection E. So with that, I would like to recommend the following. For agenda item 4C12, case number 2023-00198, agenda item 4C13, case number 2023-00199, agenda item 4C15, case number 2023-00201, agenda item 4C16, case number 2023-00202, agenda item 4C17, case number 2023-00203, agenda item 4C18, case number 2023-00204, agenda item 4C19, case number 2023-00205, agenda item 4C20, case number 2023-00206, and agenda item 4C21, case number 2023-00207, and I would propose to the committee a violation of the aforementioned statute 32-1263-D7. Is there a second?
This is Tappas. I second.
Okay. I would make a recommend. Oh, I'm sorry. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Liddell?
Yes.
Lukami?
Yes.
Tappas?
Yes.
Madari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you. And so the recommendation to the board is in each of those identified cases to request or recommend a fine of $2,000 for each entity or each case. Is there a second to that recommendation? Fukami.
My question was if the fine is applied for each case, or is it each office location? That's just in generally had that question.
Right. And because there are multiple cases at an office location, I am proposing a fine for each to be carried by each case as a recommendation to the board.
Okay.
Because they are separate complaints. Other comments? Is there a second to that recommendation?
This is Karen Berrigan. I second that.
Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Liddell?
Yes.
Lukami?
Yes.
Tappas?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries. Thank you. So as you all are aware, I skipped in that grouping agenda item 4C14, case number 2023-00200. And I am proposing, based on the report from the consultant on page 2050, violation of 321263D7, 15, and 16. And just to let the committee know, 15 within that statute is engaging in any conduct or practice that constitutes a danger to the health, welfare, or safety of the patient or public. And again, this is for a business entity. And then 16 is engaging in a policy or practice that interferes with the clinical judgment of a licensee providing dental services for a business entity or compromising the licensee's ability to comply with this chapter. So in that particular case, as identified by the investigator, of which I agreed, is why I separated that out and would propose that consideration to the committee is the violation of those various areas of statute. And we're open for discussion or a second.
This is Karen Berrigan. I'll second.
Okay. Further discussion. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodo?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Mallory?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries. Thank you. So in light of those violations, I'm recommending to the board for this case a fine of $6,000. Based on the three violations at $2,000 each. Is there a second?
This is Berrigan. I'll second.
Okay. Further discussion. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Mallory?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries. Thank you all. We are now at a point where we can do our usual approach for cases. I will admit to the committee that I had some struggle with two cases, which I will identify. It's agenda item 4C35, case number 2023-00356, and case number agenda item 4C36, case number 2023-00361. I make this comment to you because if anybody has that on their list of dismissal, or letter of concern, when we get to that point, you can certainly make that recommendation. I did not identify those because I just didn't have a sense one way or the other. So I'm just sort of making that disclosure to the committee. With that, I would make the following recommendations for dismissal. Agenda item 4B1, case number 2023-00319. Agenda item 4C28, case number 2023-00259. Agenda item 4C32, case number 2023-00294. And agenda item 4C37, case number 2023-00480. At this time, I'd ask if there's any committee member that would like to remove any of those cases mentioned for dismissal.
a question. If on case, where was it? B1, I have to reopen my notes, but I had a note that it should be reopened against a new doctor. So if we dismiss it, can we reopen it or for a new?
We should deal with that at that time. So we can remove that for right now. David, okay. That's fine. So okay. We'll remove 4B1. That's fine.
Okay.
Anybody else? I have a similar one for another case, so I know what you're saying. And did anybody want to add any cases to the listing that were not mentioned?
This is Kakami.
Yes.
I have case 4C1. Did you list that for dismissal? 2023.
4C1, yes, but I also wanted to do a letter of concern for the other doctor. So similar to David, we'll just deal with that separately, Cynthia.
Okay.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Excuse me, this is Berrigan. I had also 4C36.
So you're okay. Does anybody want to discuss 4C36? Are we fine with recommending dismissal for that?
I had a letter of concern for that one.
So, Cynthia, do you want to do you have a comment regarding the letter of concern for direction? And Karen, would you be okay with a letter of concern or would you?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
So Cynthia, we'll do that when we get to it. Okay.
Fine.
All right. So, I'm just going to make that note. All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So I'll withdraw. I was just looking at my notes again. I'll withdraw my objections to, B1. I'm okay with dismissing it.
Okay. All right. So I will review what we have for, dismissal, and I'll just do agenda item since I've already announced the case. 4B1, 4C28, 4C32, and 4C37. Is there a second to that?
Dodell will second those.
Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Kakami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. All right. Now on to letters of concern. I am recommending 4B2, case number 2023-00344. Agenda item 4C24, case number 2023-00237. And through Dr. Fukami, case number 4C36, 2023-00361. Are there any additions? Or are there any of those cases? Let's start there, excuse me. Anyone want to discuss those in further and remove them from a letter of concern? Seeing none, are there any additions to that list?
Can you repeat the number just by agenda item?
Sure. So recommending 4B2, 4C24, and 4C36.
Thanks.
Okay. Other comments? Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Odell?
Yes.
Mukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Bahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. So now on to each of those cases to provide direction to the board, beginning with agenda item 4B2, case number 2023-00344. I am recommending to the board to consider emphasizing the importance of thorough hard and soft tissue examination with detailed and complete documentation. Are we okay with that direction, or would anybody like to add anything or change anything? April, did you get that okay?
I did, thank you.
Okay. For 4C24, case number 2023-00237.
Do we want to vote on the last policy?
Oh, I didn't know. I figured we voted on the letter, so we knew that. We were just making sure we had the language right. You want to vote on that language?
Gotcha, sorry. No, I'm with you now.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
I'm with you now.
Okay. Yeah, this is just to make sure we provide the right direction to the committee, or to the board. I'm sorry. All right. So going down to 4C24, case number 2023-00237, I am making the same recommendation, emphasizing the importance of thorough hard and soft tissue examination with detailed and complete documentation. Any other comments, thoughts regarding that letter of concern? And April, did you get that okay?
Yes, thank you.
All right. And then last is 4C36, case number 2023-00361, Cynthia.
For the letter of concern, I suggest recommend written consents be completed. Recommend written consent to remove implant is signed by patient in order to document that patient understands rationale for recommended treatment.
Right. So I think your start was better. Why not just say emphasize the importance of ensuring thorough communication about treatment plan and rationale, and ensure that all consents are signed by the patient. What do you think of that?
That's fine.
I think keeping it broad like that addresses everything, because we want them to do it all the time, right?
Sure.
Is that okay?
April, I'm fine with that.
Okay. Did you get that okay?
Yes, thank you.
I think the part about communication is important also, Cynthia, only because it seemed like that was some of the issue too.
I thought
it'd be good to kind of put that in there. So I appreciate that. All right. So those are our dismissals and letters of concern. Thank you all very much. We are now on agenda item 4C1, case number 2023-00096. As mentioned previously, I would like to recommend dismissal against the licensee and a letter of concern for Dr. Condorado, who was mentioned in the report. So I would like to handle the dismissal first. Did anybody have other thoughts about dismissal for that licensee? So hearing none, can I get a second for dismissal?
Astrari seconds.
Okay, Sarari second. So we have a recommendation for dismissal of agenda item 4C1, case number 2023-00096. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Nadal?
Yes.
Okami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Manohari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. For the letter of concern, this was identified through the consultant of which I agree, or the investigator of which I agreed, for Dr. Condorado, discuss the importance of identifying the need for referral or no treatment when limited by either lack of equipment, supplies, or capacity to perform the to perform an identified procedure. Comments, thoughts about that recommendation? Changes? So can I get a second for that letter of concern proposal?
This is Kappas, I second.
Thank you. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Nadal?
Yes.
Tommy?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Manohari?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion carries. April, did you get that language okay?
Yes, I did. Thank you.
Okay. And then again, that's for Dr. Condorado, who was identified by the investigator.
Correct.
Very good. Okay, we are now on agenda item 4C22, case number 2023-00210. I am proposing a violation of 32-1201-14. And I will open it up for a second or discussion or other. If it's helpful.
Dr. Caputo?
Yes.
So I don't disagree with your recommendation. I'm looking at my notes and there was one thing that bothered me. It said that, someone by the name of Nikki Martin was adjusting the denture on 214. And I could not find that person in the Bodex database that's a licensee. So it was an unlicensed person adjusting the denture.
Yeah, and I saw the same thing. David, do you have a page?
I got to go find that. Sorry, I didn't write the page number.
But I do remember something to that agree, and I think that falls under this same heading, obviously, of having an unlicensed person provide dentistry.
Okay,
let me look at my note just to see what page references I have for – I'm looking at 30, 65, and 66. I don't know if that addresses your part, David, but that's just.
Yeah, I'm going to that. So it's 30, 65, and 66?
Correct. It's just mainly the investigator's conclusion.
Reading.
Substantiating all three allegations.
But if, and I'm getting my feet back into all this. If the dentist let a unlicensed provider provide treatment, is that?
That is an additional issue, and it's certainly something we can make a recommendation on. So you're absolutely fine.
Yeah. Yeah, that I would like to do that. I just got to remember what section that falls under.
Does anybody else remember seeing that? And
I'm going to remember the page.
It's number 17.
Page 17 of the notes? Or
no, I'm sorry. It's statute number 32-12101.
Oh, I see. 17.
Number 17.
Thank you. What? How does it read, Cynthia?
Employing unlicensed persons to perform or aiding and abetting unlicensed persons in the performance of work that can be done legally only by licensed persons.
Okay, so we would, and so David, what I'm hearing you say is you would like to add 17 to them.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's fine. But I'd like that, we want to just give direction to the board too, so they are understanding. So if you have a page number.
I'm looking.
No, I understand, I just.
No, I know. I know you need it. I'm working.
Yeah. Does any other committee member remember that reference?
Let's see if I have a date on it. It was on 214. So let me go
214-2023.
Page 3095. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. So I see the notes. It says adjustment in discussion by Nikki Martin. 214.
Oh, right. Exactly.
Yep.
Okay, so it's important that we make that identification to the board for that for this recommendation. So we want to include reference to the clinical note that's on page 3095, dated 2/14/2023, for substantiation of that violation. All right, so we have a proposed violation of 32-12-01, 01, 14, and 17. Did you want to second that, David?
I will second that.
Okay, further discussion. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Okay. Yes.
Mukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. So regarding recommendation, I'm inclined to recommend a non-disciplinary, but I'm open to any committee members that feel it should be disciplinary. So let's start there. Does anybody feel strongly one way or the other? Cynthia.
The concern was that there was a request for a refund, yes?
I didn't see restitution listed. Do you have a reference for that?
I think he, in his complaint,
I have a note of 5,500, yes, somewhere.
Yes, so page 3066, he is asking for a refund of money spent.
And but the investigator mentions that the patient never paid $5,500.
Oh, right.
So, I mean, I know this is the actual money, I think he paid some, but I didn't know just for the, to the question of whether this is non-disciplinary, disciplinary.
I see.
That splits the difference, right?
So. Not necessarily. I mean, it doesn't have to be, I guess. My question is, do you or anybody else on the committee feel this should be a disciplinary recommendation or a non-disciplinary? I had non-disciplinary, but I'm open for other input is what I'm saying.
I'm tending towards disciplinary if they were, we just voted that they were basically using unlicensed providers. That to me is pretty serious.
I'm fine with that. And I hear you. Okay. Other thoughts? All right, so we have a motion for a disciplinary recommendation from Dr. Dodell. And what I was going to recommend, David, and I didn't include anything about this, so you might have to help me in terms of how you would change this, but I was recommending 6 CEUs in diagnosis and treatment planning of implant-retained dentures. Are you thinking ethics would be an additional?
Yes.
3 units of ethics?
I'm okay with that.
All right, so there's a disciplinary recommendation for 6 units of CE in diagnosis and treatment planning of implant-retained dentures and 3 units of CE in ethics. Moved by Dodell, seconded by Caputo. Further discussion. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Mukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion, recommendation carries. Thank you. We are now on agenda item 4C23, case number 2023-00235. I heard something. Cynthia.
Were there monies? Were we going to discuss monies for the last case?
I'm sorry. I did not see that. And again, I think someone went back to, there was a question whether that payment was there. So I did not see, I'm not inclined to include that in our recommendation. Do you want to?
This is Kappas on page, at the end of the consultant's consultation or, conclusions. He does say the patient paid $12,950 for the implant-supported denture treatment. This includes the $700 for the new denture. The patient never paid the $550 balance owed.
$5,500.
Yeah, excuse me.
Now, I guess my confusion is there and why I'm not inclined to make a recommendation about reimbursement. But, again, that's – go ahead, Cynthia.
Oh, I mean, I defer to the others on this one, but I think my initial thought was to – I realized that the patient did not overpay for the implants, that 6 were charged, not the 8 that were originally treatment planned. So that was appropriate, but maybe to refund the money for the actual dentures, since those are unusable at this point, that they do indeed need to be replaced with new ones elsewhere. And if you were to look at page 3100, there's a ledger there. I think it reflects that the monies for the dentures would be $3,000 plus the additional $700 paid additionally by Dad at the end when it came time to attempt to make a new set.
Okay, which is, it actually ends up on the second half of that. You mean 3101?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. See that?
It says there's a pre-conversion credit there too. Well, here's the deal. We already voted on a motion so we're looking to amend it. And so the question to you is, would you like to make an amended motion to include restitution?
Yes.
Okay. And what would that amount be?
$3,700.
And then is there a second to the motion to amend the previous motion to include restitution of $3,700? For the dentures that are not usable or functional, probably a better way to state that.
This is Berrigan, I'll second.
Okay. Further discussion. Okay, so April, what we're doing is just amending the previous recommendation to include restitution in the amount of $3,700. So roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Odell?
Yes.
Mukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motahari?
Yes.
Okay, so that amended recommendation passes. Thank you. All right, so now we are on agenda item 4C23, case number 2023-00235. Yes, David.
So I just have a question to clarify something. When records show up in the licensee record section, are these records only from the provider? But if they don't have them from the provider, would they put the records in there if a patient supplied them? Just trying to get kind of provenance of what's in there.
Well, and I'll let certainly board staff answer or even Seamus, but my understanding is if it's coming from the patient, it's going to be within their complaint. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, I just want to make sure that if something is in the licensee record section, that means the
that's from the licensee.
And it's only from the licensee. It's not from any other third-party source.
Other than, I mean, I know we've seen things like text messaging stuff that occurs sometimes, but those would still be records that the licensee maintained. But Ryan or staff, do you want to, anybody want to speak to that directly?
So I will just confirm that whatever is in the licensee's records section is what we receive directly from the licensee. If they submit to us records that they receive from a third party source, I mean, that could end up in there, but we received it directly from the licensee. So we assume that it's something that they, you know, had requested on their own to include in their documentation. Does that help answer your question?
That answers it perfectly. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, David. Okay, so in this particular case, I am proposing violations of 32.1201.014 and 32.1263.D8. And so there's a licensee issue and an entity issue based on the complaint itself, and then just to make everybody aware, D8 refers to failing to maintain or provide patient records pursuant to 32.1264. And then let me just get back. April, sorry.
The case itself is open against the licensee only. So are you recommending that we open a new case against the entity?
No, so it's my understanding that as long as it's within the report itself, we can include it. And so this, the entity which is owned by the licensee is this Gilbert Road. So that's why I listed it that way. So, and it's my understanding that as long as it's within the report, it's we're able to do that without having to open up a new complaint. Am I wrong on that?
Well, I guess it's a matter of how we get there. If the licensee in question is the owner of the entity, then I believe we can all.
It would just be the licensee.
Yes.
Okay. Right. So even though the entity. And it's a fining issue, so that's fine. So then what we'll do, let me just look at 1263D. So then it would be, then we can make it 32, 1201, 01, 14, and 24. And so I will open that up for discussion with that proposed, those proposed violations. Comments, questions, or a second?
Since I had interrupted you, can you repeat the entity violation that you had?
I removed it. So listening to you and Seamus, I just changed it from 14 and 24. So I removed the entity violation.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. So the, there's a proposal for violation of 32-1201-01, 14 and 24. And if it helps.
So you're suggesting getting rid of one that they did not disclose the records?
Let me just see my notes, David, to answer that question.
Because one of the points was the patient asked for records, and that was kind of why I asked about my question about the licensee section, because during the interview, they claimed they never got the records released, but it was clearly in the licensee records.
Right. This was the, I guess that was the issue for me, is because they were saying that that didn't happen, but they said it might have been how the patient submitted the request. And I think that's why I did it the way I did originally, is because the request was actually to the entity, right?
I would have to find the actual written request.
31, let me just look.
They claimed that the patient's husband contacted them, and they said they needed it in writing from the patient because of HIPAA, which I don't disagree with, but I did find the request in the licensee records, so I'm trying to figure out that conflict.
Right. Well, in the records, it's actually the very first page in the record. So it's 3187.
Yep.
The request is to Gilbert Road Dental Care. That's why it's clearly there, and I would agree with you. So that's why I included that as a violation. But if per what April and Seamus are directing, that since it's the licensee is the owner, then the violation would be against the licensee. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. But I thought you took it out. That's what I was asking.
No, I just changed it. I changed it from an entity violation to a licensee violation.
Okay, I missed it. Okay, I thought you took it totally out. Okay, good. Then I'm good.
All right, so this is proposing a violation of 32-1201-01, 14, and 24. Deb.
Let me get unmuted here. I actually think your original citation was correct, because that's not an entity citation. The 32-1264-D is just under maintenance of records. It's not relevant, or it's not specific to entities. So that's not an entity violation.
I said 1263, not 64.
Oh, okay. So, the violation would be pursuant to 32-1264-D.
All right, let me look at that.
Which is the requirement for a licensee to provide records to a patient upon written request.
Right. So having said that, and so then maybe this is a question for Seamus or Ryan, is this the appropriate reference, or would we do 32-1201-01-24?
You would do 1201-01-24 as it relates to 1264-D.
Okay, Deb?
Yes, that's good.
Okay. So now that we're there, other comments, or is there a second to that?
I'll second it now.
Okay, thank you, David. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Lodahari?
Yes.
Okay. That motion carries. So I am proposing a non-disciplinary recommendation to include six CEs in treatment planning, implant treatment planning and placement, and a fine of $500. Open for discussion, second or other.
David here. I like some a little bit more because looking through my notes, they planned out multiple implants before they ever did a comprehensive exam. And they did a whole bunch of limited exams. And then there's a specific note saying patient hasn't been to hygiene a long time, but they're doing treatment this whole time without a comprehensive exam and without any type of perio maintenance or perio treatment at all.
Okay. April.
I just wanted to point out that as a non-disciplinary action, there can't be a fine.
Okay, so it would have to be disciplinary. Correct. If you were to do the fine. Thank you very much. All right, so the consideration here then is for a disciplinary action. Because I think the fine needs to be there, and I'm fine with what you're saying, David. So you would increase the CE to what? Or add CE to what level? And are we considering ethics in here as well, record keeping, risk management?
I would say risk management in 6 hours.
I think, okay. To include,
give me a sec to put my head together.
Because if we mentioned this before and we said that usually comes in a series of two, so maybe 4 hours of record keeping with our risk management with record keeping.
I'm fine with that.
Okay. And then 3 hours of ethics.
I thought you said that would be in 2 hour intervals.
No, ethics is separate to the.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. And anything else? Do you want to include treatment planning and diagnosis and treatment planning since they were treating out of sequence?
Yep, I'm going to go with that and do 4 hours.
So 3 hours or 4 hours of diagnosis and treatment planning?
Is that in 2 hour intervals?
I don't know.
If it's in 2 hour intervals, then I would do 4 hours.
Okay. So we'll say, let me just get to my notes.
Treatment, this is AAG Monahan. Just from what I've seen with the board and with other boards, risk management is generally 4 hours, as you stated. And then anything else is usually in increments of 3 hours.
Okay. So 4 hours of risk management to include record keeping, 3 hours of ethics, 3 hours of diagnosis and treatment planning, and 6 hours of implant treatment planning and placement, and a fine of $500. Is there a second?
I'm good with that, so I'll second it.
Okay. Dodell seconds the disciplinary recommendation as mentioned. Further discussion. Hearing none, roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Lodahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that recommendation. Thank you. And April, did you get that listing okay?
Yes, I did, actually.
Awesome. All right. We are now on agenda item 4C25, case number 2023-00247. I am proposing a violation of 32-1201-01-14. Second, other discussion or changes or comments? So, am I hearing that? Oh, sorry, Fukami.
I don't know if I'm the best person to comment on this. I was kind of hoping that we'd get the expert opinions of some others on this committee. But I have two questions that were, that arose with this. One would be the issue of consent. So if I, just to revisit, I think the licensee had a medical emergency during the procedure almost right after it started, and I think another individual took over at that time, which was understandable, but was their consent given to the second provider for the pretty extensive treatment that was involved here? You know, I don't think it was temporized, but I think they actually followed through and completed the entire treatment plan for that day. So that's one. And then second was I think that I would like to hear from those that place a lot of these sorts of implants, if this is a viable treatment that was given to this patient, or if they had any concerns, whether it was the implants or dentures.
Okay. So based on your comments, do you see a violation here or not? Is that what you're saying? You're not sure if there's a violation?
I think based on the first one, I see a violation. I agree with you. I can second yours.
Okay. Are there other comments from other committee members? This is a very full case. I understand that, and I think we'll touch on a lot of what you already mentioned, Dr. Fukami, as well as some other things that I saw within the record that I found troubling. But in light of that, this was at least what I saw for a violation, but I'm open to other input. Dr. Motihari.
Yes, to emphasize what Dr. Fukami was mentioning, I also had some issue, as you said, Dr. Caputo. I was trying to find out some of these mini implants are being standard of care. I realized they said it's FDA approved. However, from what I know, mini implants are utilized as temporary solution, not for permanent restoration. It actually made me to go and talk to our prosthodontist, and good to know that one of them is actually on the board. So I also had some issue with that as well.
Okay. So at this point, it seems as though there's at least an acceptance that the proposed violation is valid, and I heard Dr. Fukami second it. Other comments regarding the violation of 32-1201-014? Okay, so roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Marion?
Yes.
Miguel?
Yes.
Tommy?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. So the motion carries for the recommendation of that violation. Now getting into the meat of the case, I certainly will look to anybody that has more information than I do on the committee. But everything that I could see, Mindy, to answer your question, is that the introduction of mini implants was that as a temporary solution or a temporary opportunity for placement of something that a standard dental implant could not do. Subsequently, though, and through a lot of research, these have become an accepted treatment modality for both fixed and removable. I think one of the things that maybe gives us all pause is that this is not a common or widespread application of this technology or approach, but anything that I saw, and I looked at articles that were written not just by the licensee, who I'm sure we saw the references in the packet, but also more recent references through NIH as well as other sources, that this is a acceptable treatment approach. It may not be commonplace, but I think for our purposes, I think we have to accept that there's nothing in the literature that says it's absolutely contraindicated. And in fact, if you look at a lot of the data that's reported, failure rates and complications related to MDIs are actually similar or comparable to SDIs. So I think for our purposes, I don't know that we should delve too far down that pathway. I think there are other more significant issues to address, whether versus identifying whether this is a appropriate treatment approach, because everything I'm seeing in the literature says that it is. So that's, I'll make that comment, but I'll certainly open it up to anyone else that has on the committee that has more information about MDIs. Okay, so here are my notes that, and where I'm struggling. To begin, and I can give you some page references here because I have a number. But this patient was provided with enteral sedation without the licensee or the subsequent treating dentist, as Dr. Fukami has identified, having a 1303 permit. So that's in violation of our statute and rules. I'm also significantly concerned, as noted by the investigator, the health history is incomplete. And not only is it incomplete, there's no indication in any chart note, and I reviewed every single one, that the health history was even reviewed and or addressed with the patient. There are no indication of vital signs. There's no indication of ASA status of the patient. And I find it tremendously disconcerting and even troubling that a patient not only would be treated without a complete medical history, but would also be sedated accordingly. And I think to Dr. Fukami's point regarding consent, I don't think it was possible, Dr. Fukami, to even provide that level of consent. And I didn't see it in any of the documents that I reviewed, where you have a practitioner, which obviously is unfortunate, that something happened to them and they had to discontinue care. And even though that might have been the right and prudent decision at the time, it should have been established that that provider coming in was capable of taking over for that services and the patient was accepting and approving of that substitution versus terminating the case and rescheduling the patient. But I feel as though this patient never should have been scheduled for treatment in the first place without a complete medical history being obtained and reviewed. And then certainly sedating a patient without a permit is, I think, a significant issue. So those are my challenges, and I'll certainly entertain comments or other input from the committee. So I'm going to have the committee, and this just, I'll just give you some page references here. Begin at page 3618, and let me just go there and tell you what I see. So on 3618, we see the reference towards the bottom of that page and of that note. Oral sedation was administered with 10 milligrams of Valium and one Benadryl. No amount on the Benadryl was listed. That constitutes sedation requiring a 1303 permit according to our rules. And so there's that. Next, I will direct the committee to page 3625. And this is where the consultant identified a number of deviations, no pre-op radiographs, no CBCT for pre-op assessment or documentation, even though one was taken later, no periodontal charting for the extraction of the teeth, though not a significant issue for me, including no existing restorations on the records. But certainly the last deviation there on the medical history form, a significant portion of that medical history was not answered or reviewed by the patient. And then, as I said, subsequently looking at all of the patient entries, there's no identification by any treating dentist that the medical history was reviewed with the patient. And then last is pages 3973 through 75, which is, oh, that's the health history for the patient, that, as you can see, that portion that is not answered at all, nor is there any follow-up or review. So understanding that, I'm making a recommendation for the committee to consider of a disciplinary action to include 3 units of CE in the area of ethics and have a practice restriction that includes, that involves no sedation to be administered by the licensee without the appropriate training and permit. And I will certainly open it up for discussion with the committee. Or take a second to that recommendation.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a second. Other discussion by the committee.
This is David. One thing that bothered me was in the beginning of this case where they said they did a kind of a telemedicine consult and actually gave the patient a quote on a treatment plan without physically ever examining that patient.
Right. And I'm familiar. Right. And I know I read through some of that, David, and I think, and I hear what you're saying, and maybe that gets addressed in the ethics component.
Yes, no, I'm okay with that, but maybe I'm thinking maybe more on the ethics component than the 3 hours.
Yeah, or
we're stuck on that again. Okay.
I think we're just stuck there.
Okay, that's fine. It just troubles me that they're doing this kind of consultation and actually given hard, you know, I don't have a problem with doing a telemedicine thing to discuss things in generalities of what possible things there are, but then following it up really with, well, the comprehensive exam and the proper treatment plan, but to give a patient a financial quote without physically ever seeing them, that bugs me.
I understand. I think that's kind of addressed at the same level. I think there are a lot of misses here in how the patient was managed, and I think that's what we're sort of touching on.
And I'm okay. I
understand.
I'm just giving my opinion.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Other comments? Dr. Fukami.
So again, this goes to my second question, which was the viability of treatment, which I completely defer to others on the committee on this one. And I do agree with you on the comments you made on a lot of the mini implant research issues. I think the part that gave me pause is when you go back to that page 3625, I think you were on that for earlier. So if you look at that page and you see the opinion that was given by an oral surgeon who saw this patient subsequently, that his findings at that time was that this patient actually currently exhibits left V3 hypoesthesia. If you see the yellow highlighted areas, has exhibited signs of hypoesthesia of the left lateral nose. And it says that actually some of the implants are in the maxillary sinus.
And I'm with you, Cynthia, and that's why I was looking into this. And
so,
my one thought is that this is potentially a complication that it can occur with MDIs and SDIs, and the complication rate is about equivalent. I get it. I'm with you. I just feel like the literature doesn't support, from what I'm reading, I'm open to anybody else's input, but the literature does not support that this is not appropriate at this point in time. I just did not see enough in the literature to speak otherwise.
Oh, I didn't mean to make that directed at the reason why this treatment should or shouldn't have been done, although that is a question. But I meant rather there has been a complication with the treatment that was given to this patient, and I don't think that that was addressed or managed, actually, even though I think that the patient has asked for that to be managed.
Okay. So does that need to be addressed by us in our recommendation? Is that what you're saying?
Right. So I heard the CEs related to sedation, but should there be one for implant, risk management in that centered or complication management, et cetera, and restitution, right?
I didn't see. Where's the restitution part?
Well, the patient is asking for a full refund, but I think that's subject to discussion. So,
wasn't it provided?
That I do not know.
I thought I read somewhere that the patient was refunded. But I also didn't see the consultant.
Page 3634, consultant mentioned that refund for provided treatment was offered by Dr. S, $38,000. There was no
response from the patient. Yeah. So it was, so I took restitution off the board, Cynthia, in light of that situation. But I'm fine if you were looking at additional CE in implant management of implant complications. Is that what you're thinking?
Yes.
And how much CE?
Is it 6 units usually for that?
Okay. So 6 units of managing implant complications. Thank you for that. Anybody else? All right, so we have a proposal to recommend, I'm just going to get to my notes, this is a disciplinary recommendation to include three CEs of ethics, six CEs of management of implant complications, and a practice restriction to include no sedation administration without appropriate permitting. And David, I know you said you seconded, you would second it. Would you second the addition of CE?
Yes, I'm good with that.
Okay. Other discussion. So we have a motion. April, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Hey, so this is Ryan. We're in the meeting room together. A quick question on the last part. There's a comment about something in the order to the effect that they can't do any anesthesia or sedation without the proper permit. Seamus, I don't know if you want to jump in here, but is that something we should be writing in an order since it's already a law and you can't do anesthesia or sedation unless you have a permit? Is this something we have to point out specifically, Dr. Caputo?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I thought the same. Yes, I'm good with that. So just remove that.
Do you think we need to do a civil penalty because the dentist is already doing something without a permit that they should be doing only with a permit?
I'm fine with that. What would that be, 500?
You can do any number between up to $2,000, so $1 up to $2,000. But is that the case? There's some knowledge that it appears that they are doing anesthesia. Well,
they were clearly sedating the patient, and that's documented clearly in the notes. I also am... To Dr. Fukami's earlier point, I'm also very concerned that there was a transfer of care of a sedated patient, and it's not clear that the patient was either aware or knowledgeable of that transfer and whether they got – so they potentially treated a patient without appropriate consent, and I think that's what she was alluding to. So to that point, Ryan, how to word it? I would look to your guidance, but I would be fine with in lieu of a practice restriction, which I absolutely understand what you're saying, so I accept that. Mm-hmm. But then a fine of $2,000.
Yeah, because maybe Seamus, I don't know if you have anything to add, because I mean that's a way to address a previous violation, but the fact that he's doing it already isn't that a bigger concern? It's kind of like the matter that is going before a hearing for revocation for somebody that was doing something that they shouldn't have been doing, albeit that was under an order. But it's kind of similar to that, is it not?
Yeah, this is A.G. Monahan. Ryan, I agree. I missed the part where you said practice restriction. I heard you throw it in there. My intention was to make it part of the facts. I missed when you said it was a practice restriction. But no, you can. The violation is fine with the civil penalty, but yeah, again, you may want to take into account the fact that this individual performed sedation without a permit.
Are you saying, Ryan? Am I hearing you correctly, Ryan? About a licensure revocation? Is that what I hear you saying?
No, not necessarily. That was kind of a different scenario because that.
No, I understand. Yeah. Okay.
Something to acknowledge that he can't. And so the committee is then making a recommendation that there should be acknowledgement by the board that this person was doing something that they weren't permitted to do.
Right.
And so, I think fining the person would be appropriate. And maybe to Seamus's point to, maybe it is a good idea, like you were saying, Dr. Caputo, to reiterate it in the order so that they are aware that they cannot do this because there is a permitting process. It's not you just get to do it because you know whatever, but it's – yeah, so reiterating, I don't think is a bad idea either.
And I think that's my point. And so that gets addressed with the fine. And so I would think the fine, the civil penalty of $2,000, recognizing that – the licensee was sedating a patient without a permit. So yeah, instead of the practice restriction, we'll delete that section. So basically we have a recommendation to the board for disciplinary action to include 3 CEs in ethics, 6 CEs in management of implant complications, and a $2,000 civil penalty for practicing sedation without a permit.
And that's an amended motion, correct?
That would be, well, we're sort of finalizing it now, Seamus, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. I was actually just in the process of getting the language right, is what we're doing. So we're amending it as we speak, babe. It's not finalized. April, did you get that okay?
I did. Thank you.
Okay. So, David, would you like to second that?
I'll second those changes.
Okay, so that motion is first by Caputo, second by Dodell. Further comments from the committee? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Lucami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Mudahari?
Yes.
Okay, so the motion carries for that recommendation. Thank you. We are now on agenda item 4C26, case number 2023-00250. And it is for the same case that we just discussed. And I am proposing a violation of 32-1201-014, utilizing the same rationale. And so I'll put that to the committee for a second or discussion or changes.
Second.
Second by Fukami. Further discussion?
Just some clarification. The one we're talking about now was the one that took over from the doctor that fell ill, right?
Correct.
And was she still doing the case under sedation without a permit?
Yes.
So wouldn't that be the same thing to add on?
We're not there yet.
Oh, okay, sorry. Okay. I'm jumping the gun. My apologies.
That's okay. This is just a violation of 32-1201-014. So first by, moved by Caputo, second by Fukami, other discussion. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Mudahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that violation. So just to, for purposes of the record, I'm looking at pages 4068 and 4282 through 84, which are similar to the aforementioned references in the previous case. Though I see the process the same here, the very issues that were identified, not just treating a patient under sedation without a permit, but similarly treating a patient with an incomplete history, no review of that history, no physical or other assessment of the patient that would be appropriate for treatment. And so the same recommendation would carry, and to include the proposal made by Dr. Fukami regarding, because I would think, Cynthia, you would agree the management of the complications would have been under this licensee as well. Are you fair with that?
Yes.
Okay. So the recommendation here would be a disciplinary action to include 3 CEs of ethics, 6 CEs of management of implant complications, and a $2,000 civil penalty for treating a patient with sedation without a permit. Is there a second to that recommendation?
I'll second it.
Second by Dodell. Further discussion. Hearing none, roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Manohari?
Yes.
Okay, the motion carries for that recommendation. Thank you. We are now on agenda item 27. And Seamus, I would like to ask you a question here. 4C27 and 4C29 involve the same licensee. They are for different matters. My concern, where I'm at with this, and I could certainly check and see if the committee agrees, I find that the second case is more egregious. And so would it be better maybe to handle that case first and go back to this case? Or would we just potentially look at both cases at once? What are your thoughts?
Now, based on your statements, thank you, but based on your statements regarding the fact that they are different cases, I'd say handle them separately.
Okay.
But you may want to make – if there is a common thread afterwards, you may want to make a recommendation to consolidate them to the board.
Okay. So I want to just do a quick look at my notes. Sorry, folks. 4385. 4385. Okay, this is more of a records and inadequate referral. Okay, all right, that's Perry. All right, so if you would indulge me, I would like to look at agenda item 4C29, case number 2023. 00260 first. I am looking at violations on this case of 32, 12, 0101, 14, and 24. Is there a second to that or other discussion?
I'll second that.
Okay, thank you. Further discussion on those violations. Hearing none, roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Manohari?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for that violation. I'm going to kind of cut to the chase for you all, but I struggled with the response for two reasons. One, it wasn't from the licensee. It was from the licensee's sibling. But two, it was striking to me that the comment was that this was missionary dentistry, and as a result, it was okay that it could be substandard or inadequate. That bothered me tremendously. We should not do any less care for any patient, regardless of the circumstances, of which I think we would all agree, and that's certainly in direct violation of our oath to do no harm, and certainly from the board standard to protect the public. So to allow for anything less than our best treatment, I think, is just unacceptable. There was a reference somewhere that the licensee was retiring or retired or just wanted to do some type of charitable services, which I don't think they should be doing. And I'm bringing this all up because, and Ryan or Seamus, I could ask you for your help in this, but I'd like to consider offering the licensee an opportunity to voluntarily surrender their license. And so I'll sort of start there and kind of see what others think. If you're of a similar position or thought, and if you're okay with that approach or accepting of that approach, I might look to Ryan or Seamus to help guide us on how we get there. And if you disagree, I'm open to that feedback too. That was striking to me, and which is why I'm at where I'm at on this particular case.
This is Karen Berrigan. I agree. I think that's a nice alternative.
Okay. Anybody else? And I most would like to hear if folks, anybody disagrees with this approach, please say something.
And if they surrender their license, I assume they can't get a voluntary license on top of that.
Correct. So that's just so that, so if we're there, Ryan, Seamus, how do we get there?
Yeah, absolutely, Dr. Caputo. This is AAG Monahan. So your motion would be to recommend that the board offer a consent agreement for the voluntary surrender of licensure, and if not accepted, move the matter through the board's normal processes for revocation.
Okay, and do we have to, I know this is meaningful to the board, but would we want to provide some context for this?
Yes, and it will need to be based on, the factual allegations that you find in the investigative report and the violations. So you'll want to do everything you normally do that would support the surrender of the license, and then your recommendation would just be a consent agreement for voluntary surrender.
All right. So for the committee's purposes, I'm looking at 46, 77, and 78. I'll at least start there. All right, so
is it a request to surrender the license, or rather retire his license?
Surrender. I believe it's surrender, Cynthia. Is that correct, Seamus?
Yes. It would be not a request, but an offer to surrender.
Okay. I guess I need to check. I when you look at page 4674, it says he retired from dental practice in March. Has he already done so? Right.
I checked, and he has an active license. For your purposes, you should consider that he could go back to practice any day.
Gotcha.
I just want to find the reference for the board.
Or he could do the volunteer stuff that he's wanting to do the same thing.
Well, I don't want him doing anything.
No, I agree with you, but going back to what Cynthia was adding, that is, he still has an active license. He doesn't need to get a volunteer license. He can still do volunteer work under that active license.
I think that this is addressed, so forgive me. Yeah, I understand. Forgive me in doing this, but I think it was because of the way the consultants put the report together. I think this is addressed in 2023-00258, and I'm just going to jump up there real quick. 4385. Oh, wait. Here it is. It's this letter. It starts on page 4388. It was an interview with the doctor, and then the brother was also present. And in response, they had responses to the different cases. And his brother, in the third case, he said his brother's opinion, he provided care as a missionary type of treatment. The decision was to treat the patient as a good Samaritan and opted to do the treatment on a tooth that had been compromised. He provided the care without payment. I just think that that is this idea that, well, it really doesn't matter what I do or if it doesn't work out so well, because we're just kind of, I don't even know what we're doing. So I just, that's what I would be using as my reference, April, or Ryan or Seamus, is this letter that's starts on page 4388. It's part of the previous case involving this licensee, and it ends on page 4389. That might have been duplicated in this other complaint. Let me just see. Okay, been all over the place here. Just want to make sure. 29. I don't see it in the other one that we're dealing with first. So I would just use those as references. Did you get that okay, April?
Sorry, I had to switch screens back. So if I understand you, you're saying that those particular pages will be the reference.
They're in case number 2023-00258, but it addresses all three of the cases for this licensee. And it starts on 4388 and 4389. I'm specifically looking at this case, 2023-00260.
Right, but you're saying that what that page mentions about this particular case is the reasoning behind the recommendation.
Yes. I just want to give something to the board so that they know the reference for our recommendation.
Got it, yes. We can capture that. Thank you.
Including the substantiated violations, correct?
Correct. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem.
So, if we're good with, I think I heard somebody earlier say they were okay with, Karen, did you say you were okay with that proposal?
Yes, that was me.
So there is a motion to offer the licensee a voluntary surrender based on the aforementioned documentation and violations and substantiation of allegations, seconded by Berrigan. Is there further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Odell?
Yes.
Tommy?
Yes.
Kepis?
Yes.
Motahari.
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries for that recommendation. So, Seamus, if we go back to 4C27, case number 2023-00258, in light of this recommendation, can we just ask the board to consider them together?
Yes, you can just ask the board to consolidate them for the purposes of the consent agreement.
And do we need to formalize that with a vote?
I would just formalize that.
Okay. So we're going to ask the recommendation for agenda item 4C27, case number 2023-00258, is to recommend that the board consider it together with agenda item 4C29, case number 2023-00260. Can I get a second for that?
This is Berrigan's second.
Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Odell?
Yes.
Mukami?
Yes.
Pappas?
Yes.
Motahari?
Yes.
Okay, that recommendation carries. Thank you. We are now on agenda item 4C30, case number 2023-00291. This to me looked like a failure to respond to subpoena, 32-12-01-01-23. Is there a second or other comments from the committee?
Astrari seconds.
Okay. Further discussion. Cynthia.
Okay. Like your opinion on the concern I had regarding the use of the billing codes for insurance on page 4832. So, because I think incorrect billing or there were some billing allegations brought up as part of this complaint, that I took a look at those a little more closely. And so I see here on the insurance, I believe this is a claim and not an EOB, that the patient the claim was filed for IV conscious sedation. So D9243, when in fact, I think that the treatment rendered on that day was actually for general anesthesia. And if you look at pages 4865 and 4873, the ledger actually reflects that that's actually how it was billed through the office as well. And
4865 and 4873?
Yes.
So, because 4865 says IV moderate sedation.
Right. So all of them say IV moderate sedation.
Yes.
But the treatment rendered on that day would be general anesthesia.
And where was that at?
The general anesthesia was brought up in the license records on the first few pages. Let me see. That would be page 4863. 4863. And as well, and on the consent forms as well. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I bring this up, the reason I bring this up is because I don't know if billing with incorrect codes here contributed to how this patient or case was reimbursed for these treatments, right? I think that that was one of the concerns from the patient, was that they were told that perhaps only 1 hour would be reimbursed. I think more of that was, and in fact, paid out. And I think that they
were able to eventually recoup some, but not all, of the treatment costs for that.
Okay. And so, and then where is that in the allegations, or is it not there?
So in the consultant report, let me see here. Give me a second to find that.
An adequate diagnosis, an adequate dental crown and bridge, and then they add in an allegation of inadequate treatment planning. Of course, they didn't touch on anything about the sedation in that. Not that that matters at this point. And then there is a failure to maintain records. I don't see anything about billing. That's what I'm just curious. Where did you see that at?
I'll have to look. I know it's in there, so let me look.
And just as a threshold matter, one thing that the committee should take into consideration is if those claims were eventually paid by the insurance company with no penalty, then to the complainant, then there really may not be a violation of the board's statutes. Maybe. I'm just saying may not be.
So on page 4, thanks for that. On page 4846,
it was never billed to Delta Dental. The amount it costs is being charged to us. Is that starting there?
Yeah. And then the next line.
But then there was an update at the bottom.
If I'm the only one that saw it, then no worries. I just didn't know.
Well, I know they're asking on that on page 4847, the patient is asking for a refund.
Yes.
Right. But what did the consultant say, or the investigator? They reference some of that. They do say that. I see they have the notes.
The investigation unsubstantiated allegation number 3 regarding the refund.
Yeah. I think that's why we just landed on. That's why I landed on. So that's where I was at, Cynthia, which is why it was just a failure to comply with the subpoena is what I saw.
Yeah, I don't have a violation written. I had a letter of concern. But if it's going to be, if we already have a violation identified for something else, then.
Well, the violation would just be the failure to respond or comply with a subpoena. Having said that, well, let's just do this. So we had a second to that by Mia. Other discussion. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Varian?
Yes.
Adele?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Travis?
Yes.
Motahari?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for that violation. So when we have a failure to respond to subpoena, which can carry a penalty of $500, do we have to identify any disciplinary or non-disciplinary action, Ryan or April or Seamus?
I believe that particular statute allows for a non-disciplinary fine for failure to
subpoena. Yeah. And it's 500, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yes. So I would just propose that we impose that penalty of $500 for that failure to respond to subpoena. Is there a second to that recommendation?
This is Berrigan, I'll second.
Okay, other discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Rodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Kathis?
Yes.
Badahari?
Yes.
Okay, that recommendation for the penalty carries. Thank you. All right, so we are now on agenda item 4C31, case number 2023-00293-AO. I am identifying violations of 32-1201-01, 14, and 24. And I will open that up to the committee for a second discussion or other direction.
Was it only me that I did not see any treatment notes in this, the middle?
Yeah, and that I think is part of it. David, but that's why I was just at this point identifying those violations.
No, I agree with the violation. I was just trying to decide in my head if
how
severe we should make them.
Oh yeah, well we'll get there next. Do you want to second the violations?
All right, I'll second that, yes.
Okay, so we have a second for violation of 32-1201-01, 14, and 24. Is there other discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Badahari?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries for those violations. So to get to your part of this, David, I'm looking at pages 4904 and 4905. I am proposing a disciplinary action to include four CEs of risk management and record keeping, three CEs of ethics, and four CEs of patient evaluation and assessment. So I'll start there and then open it up for discussion, second, or other.
This is Kappas. I have a question about would this provider have needed a 1304 permit?
Yes.
So to be consistent maybe with what was done earlier, we would add a civil penalty?
Sure. I'm fine with that. I think that's perfectly reasonable, and thank you for saying that.
Mm-hmm.
So the aforementioned CE to include a civil penalty of $2,000 for treating a patient under sedation without a permit. Other comments? Oops. Cynthia.
So my only question about that is, I think this licensee was the owner, but and responsible for, and his name was on the billing and treatment plan, but he did not actually see the patient and nor treated them subsequently at the
I think the defining issue here, Cynthia, is, and we'll get to this when we get to the other person involved here in the subsequent case, but yes, you're right. But the person that came in to treat the patient was clearly identified as an independent contractor, which in and of itself has its own implications. But I think in light of that, as the person who provided the practice for that other person to treat patients in that capacity, it was his responsibility to have those systems in place. And I would put that to the board to let them determine the nuance of that, but I clearly believe that he had a responsibility to have a permit for his office, because as you know, a 1304 is really more for the facility than it is for the practitioner.
I just think that it would be a little more clear if he had actually been involved
in
any aspect of this.
He was. It's his office.
No, I understand that.
So he was clearly involved. I think to say anything less would be inappropriate given the circumstances. That this was his office and it should have been appropriately organized per protocol and rule and statute. Other comments? Okay, and Deb, did you second that?
Yes, I'll second it.
Okay, so we have a proposal to recommend. I just want to get to it. Disciplinary action to include 4 CEs of risk management and record keeping, 3 CEs of ethics, and 4 CEs of patient evaluation and assessment, to include a $2,000 penalty for the administration of sedation in an office without a permit. Further discussion. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Liddell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, that recommendation carries. We are now on agenda item 4C33, case number 2023-00301-AO. I am proposing a violation of 32-1201-01-14. And would open that up for a second, further discussion or additions, changes.
This is Berrigan. I'll second.
Okay. Other discussion. Dr. Fukin.
I would add 24 for record keeping.
Okay. And do you have some references for that?
I think that he, because he referenced that he did not add a note about the treatment on that day because he didn't actually treat the patient. He said, however, he was the one that was to be involved with that patient's care. It is essentially his patient that day.
Sure, sure. So you're that the reference being that the record keeping issue being that he made no record of the event.
Correct.
Yeah, fine. I'm fine with that. So, Karen, are you okay with that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so the addition of 24 makes it considered violations of 32, 120101, 14, and 24. Other comments? Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries for those violations. This was a very interesting response for me. And so I don't see that the investigator picked up on this at all. And really, to me, the heart of where this licensee was deficient was the letter submitted by the attorney representing the licensee. So looking at pages 5948 through 53, and I'm just going to start you there. I think it's pretty strong as to the deficiencies here. Here we do see that the licensee was an independent contractor. It troubles me that the licensee had only one interaction with the patient prior to the date of service. And the attorney clearly identifies this in the first paragraph when they say he did not see the patient for any preoperative appointments or workup. Other providers at the practice did. He was scheduled to provide treatment. Some issues arose. And because of those issues happening before treatment commenced, the dentist never provided any care. So as a result, the implication is that they weren't the treating dentist. And I think Dr. Fukami identified this clearly. The term treating dentist doesn't mean you had to provide treatment to be the treating dentist. That doctor was the treating dentist that day. Regardless, that care didn't, dental treatment didn't actually happen. You can't walk away from your responsibilities. I actually found that somewhat egregious to even make the claim, but we're almost worse to then conclude that because of that, he had no responsibility for that case, which he clearly did. As you continue on through the letter, you see some other notes. One of the things that I struggled with as well is during the event, it said that the licensee went in to check and see if he could help out, and the anesthesiologist said no, and therefore the licensee never made any effort to participate in the resuscitation of this patient. The rules are very clear about what's required when anesthesia is administered in the office setting. Three people are to be involved. From all indications that I could see, there really wasn't anybody with the anesthesiologist when the case began, and it was identified by the anesthesiologist that they had nobody with them. So they would have been reliant on office staff to be participant in that procedure. The dentist themselves should have been aware, but obviously not having the appropriate permit made them ignorant to that requirement, which all put together put this patient at significant risk. I'm quite pleased that the patient survived this event. I know it is up for some discussion, and I won't be the person to say that my thoughts on this are definitive. And as I said, I might have colleagues that disagree, but there is a picture of the licensee in the chart, and this would not have been a patient that I would have attempted nasal intubation on. Additionally, if you're doing full mouth extractions on a patient, you don't really have to nasally intubate the patient. You can orally intubate the patient, which would have been a more safe and practical approach. And I think some of those decisions could have been made as a shared responsibility for the patient had the licensee been appropriately involved and understanding of what was happening from both a anesthesia perspective and conversely, the anesthesiologist understanding what was happening from a dental perspective. That's why the permit is there. That's why that responsibility is there for the dentist to have a knowledge of what's happening on the anesthesia side, as well as the anesthesia provider having knowledge of what's happening on the dentistry side. So this patient was failed because a practitioner declined to even become involved. And I found that astonishing in many ways. So understanding that, I'm recommending a disciplinary action to include 3 CEs of ethics, 4 CEs of patient evaluation and assessment, and to mirror what Deb mentioned earlier, a civil penalty of $2,000 for treating a patient with sedation without a permit, an appropriate permit. So with that, I'll open it up for further discussion, second, or other comments. I trust my impassioned comments didn't cause you all to not want to talk anymore.
I'll second it.
Okay. Thank you, David. All right. We have a second for that recommendation. Is there other discussion?
I have a question for you after this one is done.
Okay. Anything to do with this case?
Yes.
So why not ask it now?
Oh, it has to do with, is the anesthesiologist, pursuant to, I think, some of the legal changes that occurred earlier this year.
Okay. Right? Fair enough.
Gwen reported, so.
Okay. I know where you're going with that, so that's fine. All right. Other comments? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Super simple.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Godel?
Yes.
Bukhani?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Thank you. That, motion carries for that recommendation. Cynthia, I think I hear where you're heading. Do we want to notify the Board of Medical Examiners? Is that what you were thinking?
Sorry, it's muted. Yes. I mean, I think that's, if I understand the rule correctly or law correctly.
The new regulation would be that the licensee would have to do it. So the onus would be on the licensee. Conversely, though, I think we can still notify the board. April or Ryan?
Yeah, I just want to confirm that we actually did, upon receiving the complaint, we did forward a copy to the medical board for their review as well.
But okay. I think, though, they may have done it already because I believe the rule is
that they are obligated to report adverse occurrence outcomes or occurrences to their regulatory agency, similar to what the dental board has in place. Right. So that is a feature of that as well.
You mean the new law?
I thought so. I'll have to look.
I don't know if it's in force, but this would have occurred before that law was enacted too.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out as well, but.
Yeah, but that's also on that licensee. We made our notification though.
Okay.
So which is sort of the limits of what our opportunities are. Was that okay?
Yes, if they've done it already, good.
Okay. All right. So we are now on case number 4C34, agenda item 4C34, case number 2023-00302. And Ryan and Seamus, I may need some help with this. I'm seeing violations of, and I'll have to pull these up to give you the references form, but I saw violations of 32.12.13E and 32.12.94 A and B. So let me see if I can get those. 12.13 and 12.94. What did I say for 13?
You said E.
E is the business entity must notify the board in writing within 30 days after any change, which wasn't done. We identified that. And then 3294, I said. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
3294. 1294, was it?
Yeah, that's what you said.
1294, A and B, okay.
Okay, and I'm here with that, Tony. Can you tell me what that is?
Yeah, that's what I was getting to. So 1294 is supervision by dentist. A is a denturist may practice only in an office of a licensed dentist denominated as such. And B is very long, but basically it indicates that the denturist shall work under the general supervision of a licensed dentist. Effectively, what that means, David, is they don't have to be there in person. They could be available by phone as well.
No, I'm familiar with general supervision. I'm okay with that.
Okay. So that's what 32.12.94 talks about. And this did not occur here, which is why I identified those violations.
Do we have something for, so I did check this website and he clearly says Dr. Alex on it too.
Yeah, I did not see anything to that. And I don't know, Seamus or Ryan, if you know something I don't.
I went to the website and it's when you go, about.
Yeah, he says that people like to call him Dr. Alex.
So no, but he actually has it on the website.
No, maybe it's false somewhere else. Did you find another violation to that effect?
I don't know what violation would be, but isn't that kind of misrepresenting himself as a doctor?
No, it's just, I didn't see it in their regulations and I looked them up. So that's why I'm reaching out to Seamus or Ryan. If they know something I don't. I'm not familiar with these denturist statutes.
I am looking right now.
Basically, well, Seamus, the question is, he's misrepresenting himself as a dentist or certainly not as a denturist when he says doctor. Right, David?
Yeah, I mean.
No, I get it.
I think it's self-explanatory.
Well, I have a question just for kind of clarification because this is a little bit more complicated. you've identified, you know, 32, 12, 13 relevant to business entities. And so we can also then cite failing to register as a business entity. Is that true? Or are they registered or is?
I think it was registered. It's just
they are registered as an
dentist.
Entity.
I don't know if they're currently registered. Is that what you mean?
Right. Are they currently registered? And is the dentist who's involved in this, have some obligation here as well? I was reading, too, there's this violation of 32.1294G where it says that the office and the advertising must include the name of the responsible dentist, and that didn't seem to be happening either. And so,
include that.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that, Deb, and I saw that too.
Yeah,
and maybe
the doctor thing on the website could fall under 32.1263D11B, misleading advertising.
1263D11B. 11, because of the business entity.
Yeah, right.
D11. Yeah, I think that. What do you think of that, Seamus?
Sorry about that. Well, I think, you know, I'm trying to look at it right now. As committee member Cap has pointed out, this is kind of a big lift. There's a lot of different moving parts here. But I would say generally if the individual is, if the entity is not licensed under the individual and is supposed to be, then the extent of your action, of the board's actions would be to take action for not being registered. You wouldn't necessarily be able to take other action other than not being registered. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it seemed as though, if I read it correctly, the previous dentist involved with the practice left in some capacity 2 years ago. And this guy just never made the effort to update or change. He has been working with two dentists in different capacities based on their availability, but none of them seem to be identified in the manners that 32.1294, I think it's 1294, right, Deb? Or
I think
yeah, so. 32.1294 require. The one thing I was – so – are you saying, Seamus, just identifying the failure to register as an – and do we know, April, do we know if this entity is currently registered?
So I'm looking it up now, and
– but even if he's not registered, wouldn't the individual still be responsible for the false – advertising?
I think so. I was just struggling.
If he's not registered, then we wouldn't have authority over him other than under the if he's a registered denturist, then we would.
The entity. Are we talking about Geneva Dental? Is that the name of the business?
Let me make sure. Right, unless somebody else knows, go ahead and jump in.
So Seamus is not, I don't have the denturist part of the law in front of me, so there's nothing in that part of the law that says anything about misrepresented sending themselves and anything else but a denturist?
I am sure that it probably does. I am looking myself right now.
Sorry, I just don't have it in front of me.
Dentures don't come up much.
Yeah, right. I think we were all kind of there. David, what did you see on the website? Is it Geneva Dental?
I mean, which website or where did I see it on the website?
Oh, it is Geneva Dental. So it says Mr. Ryabkov, Ryabkov said he's the owner of Geneva Dental and Denture Implant Center.
Yeah, now go to the tab that says meet our providers.
Right. No, I'm just letting April know. She was asking. So it is Geneva Dental, April.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
If you go to the tab, meet our providers, you'll see the part where he says doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
In that case, the business is registered with the board.
It is?
Correct.
Okay, so they are a registered entity, Seamus. But it's not appropriately registered as per, as Deb mentioned, 32-1294-G, but also 32-1213. What did I say? 32-1213-E. Because they didn't notify the board of the change. Coming. Cynthia.
So I appreciate this discussion. To me, it's not just a business or entity registration issue. I read this with some concern that there might be some patient care or treatment issues. And so here's what I was worried about. If you look at the patient notes on page 6101, it looks, 6101. If you go to there, you'll see that it looks like, the dentist was co-signing every note, every visit. And then when you look at page 6078,
which, where do you see the cosine on 6101?
Let me take a look again. So if you look at, say, February 13th note.
February 13th,
okay. Okay, and at the end of that paragraph, there's two initials given in a pair.
ARSD?
Yes, the okay. SD is, got it, so that's... that's repeated, I think, throughout here.
Okay.
And then if you look at 6078, page 6078, which is the interview, licensee interview, it's clearly states in the middle of the page that the patient did not see any dentist the entire time. Of her care.
They don't need to be physically present, right?
So that's one. And then the other reason that I was concerned, and I hear what you're saying about that, but this is a patient now who's had thrush at least four times after these dentures were given, which I understand is a known possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But who evaluated that? Right? So is this an older patient? How do they know it's thrush versus leukoplakia versus some other issue? I would think at minimum, any complications like this should be evaluated by a dentist or a licensee. And that's where my concern arises. I think I just want to make sure that she gets taken care of. I don't know if the appropriate referrals were being made. There's no photos in here to indicate what that looks like or if it's healed. That part of the complaint was that she's continually getting thrush over and over again.
Yeah, the challenge here, though, Cynthia, you're right. I mean, I think the challenge, that's not his responsibility. He's supposed to just make that referral, and that really then becomes the responsibility of the dentist. And so I think the opportunity here would be to open up a complaint against the dentist, right? To get those records is the direction we would have to go if you want to find out that information. Because we wouldn't want a denturist treating thrush anyways, right?
Correct. That,
so,
and I she was getting treated by her primary care provider. It said on 6078 says the patient is still suffering from thrush, is on her fourth course of antibiotics given by her primary care provider.
No, right. But I'm just saying, to Cynthia's point, I don't think we could hold the denturist responsible for the thrush. That's the whole point of working under the general supervision of a dentist, right?
Correct. Yeah, I agree with you.
So the point would be, if we wanted to pursue that, which certainly we can, I just think we would have to open up a new complaint against the dentist. The question would be, which dentist is it? Now, you're saying SD, right?
Yeah, so I think that's where the, and I think there's a lot of confusion here, which is who's seeing the patient, right?
There's no SD.
yeah, I have no problem with them being seen by their primary care physician, but.
No, I'm talking about the dentist at the clinic.
Yes, who refers them to that, right? Is that, I guess, who evaluates the lesion to begin with, right? And makes that a referral.
To follow up on Cynthia things, if the denturist made the referral, was that be outside the scope of his practice?
Yeah, we don't know.
That's my worry.
It would be. But we don't know who made that referral.
Well, again, because the chart reflects both initials. And so I originally thought that the dentist actually made the referral, and then I saw this when I came across it.
Yeah, the problem is, there's no SD. Right? You said ARSD. The AR would be the denturist.
The
right?
SD is the, so if you look at page 6077, do I have that correct? I think so. Page 6077 or the one before it, sorry, 6076 in the licensee interview, he lists the supervising licensee. That was my assumption.
So SD is the Shahan Dabastani.
Right. So I assumed he saw him on the patient on that day and made the appropriate referral, which I'm okay with, but I just don't have confidence that that's actually what occurred here. And who will follow up with this one? Right.
So I think the only way to address that, Cynthia, would we'd have to request a complaint to be opened against the dentist.
Okay.
Because that would be one way of determining all the stuff that you're asking about.
And Dr. Caputo, this is AAG Monahan. You're also going to need, that complaint needs to be supported by a factual allegation.
Right. Well, the allegation is that it's not clear that the appropriate supervision is in place for referral or treatment of complications based on this finding of thrush that has been ongoing for this patient. But I think we can do that fine, that part fine. I guess I'm just saying, so we have two issues here. We have to decide how to handle it with the denturist and then the opening up a new complaint against the dentist, who appears to be the supervising dentist based on the chart notes. So let's put the complaint part to the side. How do we deal with this denturist at this point who's obviously made some errors in terms of appropriate entity registration, as has been identified and discussed, and fraudulently identifying themselves to the public? And did we find a reference, Seamus, do you know, on the representation part?
No, the threshold question really is, do people believe that they're seeing a doctor, right? And so that's really what you need to overcome here. And I think you could call that, one second.
And then the opportunities that we seem to have is, can we issue an injunction against him?
In order to issue an injunction, we'd have to know that he's practicing without a supervising dentist. Is that what your injunction is about?
Well, partly, but I was looking at 32.1297.0882, which I think is just. Now the other comment would be, can a letter be sent to the denturist identifying these issues, indicating they need to be resolved by a certain date, include a penalty for the violations, and manage it that way?
What you can do is you can issue, for not being properly registered as a business entity, you can issue a disciplinary fine, civil penalty, as that is one of the unethical conduct statutes. As far as the injunction goes, though, in order to move forward with an injunction, you're going to have to be able to state on what day at what time gotcha. This individual was working.
I don't think we can do that by what we have in front of us.
Can we do anything about forcing them to take down the doctor on the website?
I would imagine we could send him a cease and desist, Seamus.
This board does not have cease and desist authority.
Okay. So we can just say you cannot identify yourself.
If we're
including the 32.1263(d)(11b) misleading advertising, we can explain what that is, and I think he should get the hint that obviously there's, you know, mentioning that because of what's on the website, right?
I'm with you. Yes. And I'm gonna add G.
I'm just concerned there's more because he talks about patients have nicknamed him doctor. Where did the patients get the idea to nickname someone a doctor?
Yeah, right. Without you telling him, hint, hint. I'm with you. All right, let's try to get some clarity here. Ed, what was 32.1263?
D11B.
D as in David?
D as in David.
11.
Wait a minute.
There's no D.
32.1263. D11B. So 1263. D, right? And then 11, engaging in the following advertising practices. And B is advertising in a manner that tends to deceive or defraud the public.
Okay. Does that track okay, Seamus?
Well, and now this is for business entities, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So the issue here is that we're saying that he's not properly registered as a business entity, but then we're going to take action against him as a business entity. Do you see the issue?
Well, he just didn't update his registration.
He just didn't update his registration. But he is listed. The business is listed as an entity. It's just not updated.
Okay. Well, okay. Now, again, splitting hairs here. We're talking about the denturist versus the business, right? The business itself can't hold itself out as a doctor. The denturist can.
Right. That's what we're saying.
So instead of D, which, cause D is unethical conduct for business entities.
Okay.
You could just call it 1201.014, committing any conduct or practice that constitutes a danger to health, welfare, or safety. The potential harm being that, he's holding himself out. People will think that he's a doctor and go to him to provide those services.
So even though 32.1201 applies to dentists?
It applies to everybody who's a licensee or certificate holder.
Oh, well, then there you go. Is that good, Deb?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, so let's – David, you're okay with that?
No, I said I like it.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. I agree.
So we're going to get rid of 32.1263. Do we keep 32-1294 A, B, and G?
I think that's appropriate.
And then 32-1213 E, was that okay?
Yes.
Okay, so I have
April also has her hand up.
Oh, sorry. Coming, April. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask Seamus, would 1263A4 also apply in order to identify the specific various statutes that they have been talking about this whole time?
Yes, thank you, April. Yes. 1263A4, because you are citing a statute or rule that's being broken as opposed to an actual violation. So,
should we start with that?
You can just say, yeah, I would start with that. That's what I would do.
That's fine. So let's 32-1263A4. I think he's going to get the picture. At least we hope he does. Okay, so I have violations of 32-1263A4, 32-1213E, 32-1294A-B-G, and 32-1201-014.
And just for the record, for clarification, only 1294-A-B-G relate to 32-1263-A4.
Okay. We have that on the record. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second, Odell. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Odell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Odahari?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for those violations of statute. So as far as action, there is the dentists have a 27-hour CE requirement, and one of those requirements is ethics. Do we impose a CE requirement for this person as well as a civil penalty? Just do the civil penalty. I think we have ample opportunity to do a CE requirement. Obviously above what their 27 units are. I'm just identifying that they do have that.
This is Karen Berrigan. I think there really should be some CE on ethics.
Okay. So a disciplinary recommendation, recommending disciplinary action to include 3 CEs in ethics and a $2,000 civil penalty. Any?
Karen Berrigan, I'm good with that. Okay. I'll second that.
Second by Berrigan. Anybody else in terms of? That recommendation? Hearing none, roll call. Yes.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Odell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Odahari?
Yes.
Okay, that recommendation carries. Thank you. All right, so now to the second issue. Do we direct the board to open a new complaint against the identified supervising dentist, Dr. Shaheen Dabastani, with respect to the providing general supervision for this dentist? I'm trying to remember exactly how you put it, Seamus.
Maybe just regarding the failure to provide adequate supervision with the dentist, denturist.
Cynthia, are you okay with that?
Yeah, I think it should say adequate general supervision.
Right. I guess Seamus was just saying we need to be able to provide established deficiency for the board to open the complaint.
Well, wouldn't what Cynthia brought up, that this whole thing with quote-unquote the medical issue, but it's not clear.
All right, exactly. That's why I was asking if she was okay with that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as long as staff is clear on, you know, how to, you know, what to tell the investigator that the committee is looking for, I think that should be sufficient.
Oh, we don't need a vote.
No, I think you should vote, but just enough to give information to the staff, or if the investigator reviews this audio, they'll know.
Okay. April, you're okay?
Yes. I think just the failure of the general supervision or appropriate general supervision is sufficient. And it's wide enough that our investigators can think of anything they need to find.
All right. So, David, I'll take your comment as a second.
That's good.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Pluto?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
American?
Yes.
Rodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Malahari?
Yes.
Okay, that direction carries for the new complaint against the supervising dentist. We are now on our last item. This is agenda item 4C35, case number 2023-00356. And I just struggled with how to approach this, so I am just going to reach out to the committee to see if anybody identified a violation, and we'll just start from there.
So I had a problem with this, especially when the consultant, I agree with the consultant, it's difficult, the quote, difficulty to verify this without a view of a bite or the occlusal marking. I've been out of this for a while. Do we have any way to request an independent clinical review to verify these claims? Because we really can't without just a clinical note.
Yeah, I think we would have to.
So, yeah, that if I understand Dr. Dodell correctly, that is an option. It's rare, or at least we haven't used it since I've been here. If you give me a minute, I can probably find the statute or rule that supports that. Can you say?
Yeah, I couldn't remember if that was still an option to allow a clinical evaluation, an independent clinical evaluation.
Yeah, I think maybe that's part of where I was struggling on this. It just kind of.
So it's under 1263.02F. It states that a complaint refers to quality of care. The patient may be referred for a clinical evaluation at the discretion of the board or the investigation committee. So it's up to you. If you want to do that, you can do that and table the matter until after that clinical evaluation comes back.
That's how I would like to go, personally. I think we should. I don't think we can make a fair decision on this without that.
I'm completely open to that because I, like I said, I struggled with how to come to a conclusion on this. So I appreciate your insight. I will certainly second that request. Is there discussion regarding tabling this matter until that clinical evaluation can be accomplished?
I agree. I tried to look at some of the pictures. Only in one picture, page 6119, I could see some crossbite. Maybe that's the reason for cheek biting, but very difficult to see. So I agree with that.
Okay.
And I know part of the allegation or the chief complaint was that it was totally out of occlusion, so that we can't tell from the pictures because it weren't
great. Okay. All right. Other comments? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Douglas?
Yes.
Motohari?
Yes.
Okay, that recommendation carries. Thank you all very much. Really great job. That was a wide variety of cases with a lot of different things happening and a lot of moving parts. And honestly, it went a lot better than I had envisioned that we were going to be here for a while. Okay, we are now on agenda item 5, our complaint log. Against the reminder there is just to continue to review that to see if you identify any potential conflicts that you can appropriately identify with April or Yasmin, and then we can do the appropriate paperwork for that documentation. Ryan, anything for 6?
No, there's nothing for that
section. Okay. Anything for 7?
No, nothing for 7 either.
Awesome. So our next meeting is February 27th. Oh, I hear a hand. Let me go to it. All right. Any further? Let me go back to my agenda. So we are done, folks. So it is 4:37. And this meeting of the Investigative Committee on January 9th, 2024 is adjourned. Thank you all very much for